Visiting today with Michelle Payne. She's the author of Food Bullying. And what an interesting conversation that we've had today. Just, I feel like there's too much stuff that we could even cover. How did you fit it all into one little seminar here?
Well, we had a great group at the Oklahoma Women in Ag Conference. And I think food bullying is one of those topics that nobody really thinks about it, but in reality is going to define the way that we get to farm and ranch in the future. So it's a phenomenon we all need to be thinking about.
Well, when you say food bullying, talk a little bit about what you mean when you're saying that, because it can mean a lot of different things.
Sure. So food bullying is about creating the confusion and emotionalism surrounding people's eating choices and farming choices. It's the wrong labels or the mislabels on the food products, such as the non-GMO label. It's the green label. It's the claims in the restaurant menus like clean. When there is no definition, there is no distinction. When there is no measurement, there is no meaning and the label. So unfortunately, we live in a time where we know that 98.5% of the population is not on a farm or ranch. They are disconnected, and you don't necessarily trust when you are disconnected, which I think the pandemic has very clearly shown. So this fear that's being built up by the bullies is really preying on people's disconnect and distrust.
Well, and you mentioned food labels. Food labels are so hard to really decipher. Like when you go into the restaurants or even the grocery store and try to figure out what's best for your family, it's all pretty confusing.
It is. One of the things that we talked about today was the fact that there's 200,000 claims on average that the consumer has to sort through when they go to the average grocery store. 40,000 products in a grocery store, you figure five claims on each, that's 200,000 claims. Who can do that? You know, if you're in a grocery store for 15 minutes, there's no way. If you're in there for 60 minutes, there's still no way. So it's that confusion from the overwhelm. It's the push towards emotional thinking. And one of the things that we talked about was the neuroscience and psychology around all of this, because it's pretty clear that our brains are being manipulated. We actually shared a study that showed how people think about modern day farming technologies, as well as some psychology as to what happens when the brain is overwhelmed by that emotionalism that we talked about, and trying to help folks in agriculture understand how to work with others to overcome that overwhelm.
Well, and it's also really hard right now because it's hard to find the one source of truth. There seems to be so many different sources, but are any of them the source of truth?
My bone of contention is that people with firsthand expertise are the source of truth. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if I have cancer and I go to an oncologist, that person is the source of truth for me. However, I also have to realize that that doctor likely never had a class in nutrition, and therefore they should not be providing nutritional advice, because that's where that sphere of influence overreaches. And so if I want nutrition expertise, I need to talk to a registered dietitian nutritionist. Likewise, if I want expertise in how food is grown, I need to be talking to a farmer or a rancher. So the challenge that we have in agriculture is to equip more people to have effective conversations that actually connect on an emotional level, rather than throwing all the data at them that we like to do so often.
Why is the topic of food so emotional?
Well, think about it. I mean, it's something we put in our bodies. Mm-hmm. It's something that few people understand. You know, for example, I shared Jason Lusk's study that showed about two-thirds of the U.S. population two-thirds of the population thinks that their food should be labeled if it has DNA in it. I mean, that's a fairly old study, but a lot of people still don't know that. So you couple that lack of scientific knowledge with a topic like bioengineering or genetic modification. I mean, how can you bring those two worlds together? So I think that food is so emotional because, one, it's something that we consume usually at least three times a day. Two, we've been taught to fear our food. Three, sometimes we have some unhealthy habits and we feel guilty around that. I could go on and on, but there's a lot of different reasons. And what I will always talk about and we discussed today is that food should be about celebration, not condemnation.
How do we get past all of this misinformation that we hear about food? You were talking a little bit about non-GMOs and clean eating and gluten-free. How do you get around all that?
I think the best way that we can get around it in agriculture is to actually talk about why we do what we do. If we had more people in agribusiness, farmers and ranchers and others sharing the story about why we raise food the way that we do, we would perhaps be able to help the 98.5% of the population that isn't on a farm or ranch, help them understand our practices. Rather than the activists defining our story for us, perhaps it's time for us to be proactive and start defining the discussion.
Well, and you talked a little bit about, the why, you know, as talking as a fear filter, but a lot of people kind of talk about how we're supposed to do that without being confrontational or maybe, you know, getting up in arms about things.
Well, it's really very simple. It's about relating to people where they're at. I mean, you're a mom. We talked about the fact that you have twins and I have a senior and they're all girls, and that allowed us to have that connection. The same is true for any set of humans. You don't only have to talk about farming and ranching or food. You can talk about sports and the rivalry that's here in this state. You can talk about what it's like parenting. You can talk about hobbies of interest. It's about being able to relate to non-agriculture people where they are at around topics that are important to them. And it's also important for us to not be defensive. I mean, we had numerous examples in the room today when I was antagonizing people around hormones and antibiotics and sustainability. We're defensive in agriculture, and we need to lay down our arms and just to relate to others on an emotional level as human beings.
And that's sometimes hard to do because, you know, producers are so passionate about what they grow and their cattle that they don't necessarily like you being a critique of it.
Of course, but we also have to realize that we have a society who doesn't think that the people of agriculture are the same as the practices of agriculture. So in other words, just because someone is questioning why you do what you do to your cattle, they're not questioning you as a human. They're questioning your practices. And so if we can help folks in agriculture understand that the people of agriculture are different than the practices of agriculture, in other words, if someone's asking you a question, don't take it as a personal insult. They're simply asking a question about how their food is raised, which they have a right to do.
Sure. And you mentioned, too, like it's important to build that trust, you know, to find, you know, if we share our story, then they know that they can trust what we're saying is true, and that will make them want to support farmers and eat more whatever we're growing.
Absolutely. And science pretty clearly shows that if we can build that trust, that we can overcome the emotional part of the brain. So one of the things we talked about today in the psychology is the emotional elephant being controlled by the rational rider. Any of us who work with cattle know that these animals will always be tenfold our weight at a minimum, that we're never going to be able to muscle them, even though most guys like to think they can. I know that I will never be able to muscle my animals What we can do is build that trust. Well, the same is true with people that are out there buying food. You can help people understand how their food is raised as soon as you have that trust. But if you don't have that trust, which is earned through the heart, not the brain, if you don't have that trust, you'll never have the opportunity to engage in a productive conversation with them.
Well, I loved the end where you were talking about how important it is to actually build people.
It absolutely is. We are in a people business of agriculture, and I know that most of your listeners probably would prefer to deal with their land and their animals rather than other human beings, but at the end of the day, human beings are going to determine how you get to farm and ranch, and because of that, you need to engage in a conversation.
And that's why it's so important that they share their own personal story, much like you did, as opposed to letting someone else share it for them.
It is, and we all have a personal story, and some people think that they don't have a good enough story or that they're not the expert or whatever, but you have a perspective that few people understand. You know what it's like to work with the land and the animals, and the majority of the country does not. So please get out there, whether it's in your church parking lot, whether it's where you go have breakfast, whether it's on social media, just get out there and start showing the human faces of agriculture and relate to people on an emotional level.
And of course, shameless plug right here, you can get all this information in the book, but tell everybody that didn't get to come to this conference how they can get your book.
Sure. So if you go to causematters.com, all three of my books are available there, as is the Food Bullying Podcast. And I actually have a brand new stress management calendar that's designed specifically for folks in agriculture called Agriculture's Growth Calendar. So you can catch that at causematters.com and find me on social media at MPainSpeaker.
Awesome. Thank you, Michelle. We appreciate you.
Well, thanks, Casey.